Team Toyota is leading the way with their new and pre-owned Toyotas right now. Their process is fast, easy, and it puts you in control the whole way. Just check out the reviews online. With locations in Langhorne, Glen Mills, and Princeton, visit teamtoyota.net and be safe, be strong, be a team. Hey folks, welcome to the Phillies Talk Podcast presented by Team Toyota. Corey Simon and Jim Salisbury here with you as the Phils are back home at Citizens Bank Park for a brief two-game series this week against the Nationals following a 2-4 West Coast trip. It's an important week for the Phillies, but before getting into that, Jim, let's just talk a little bit about that two-series swing to the West Coast against two very good teams in the Dodgers and Giants. The Phillies lost both series, went 2-4, and you know, when they left for California, that was probably the expected result, no?
Yeah, I think so. Anytime you can go to the West Coast and come out of there 500, I think it's pretty good. And I thought if they could have went out there and went 500, they would have been it would have been a really good trip. They didn't go 500, but, you know, they didn't go out there and get crushed either. They go 2-4, better than 1-5, better than 0-6. So, couple alarming things because their strength of this team is Wheeler, Nola, and Eflin. It was alarming that Nola and Eflin both got lit up and struggled. So they'll pitch in the you mentioned how important this week is. They'll pitch in that Mets series. So that was not a good development, but they continue to hover around that 500 mark. Continue to do just enough wrong and suffer enough self-inflicted losses that they have trouble getting over 500 or at least staying there very long. But in this very mediocre division, they are right in the thick of it. That said, the Washington Nationals will come in again. It seems like we just saw them, but they come in again for a brief two-game set on Tuesday night, Wednesday afternoon. They've won 7 of 8. They're like nipping at the Phillies and the Atlanta Braves' heels here. So I think the temptation is to look a little bit forward to the Mets series starting on Friday. But this is a big series starting Tuesday night for the Phillies. They got Zach Wheeler on the mound. That's a good thing.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Zach Wheeler, one of those three starting pitchers who has exceeded expectations so far. And you referenced Aaron Nola not being the same guy he has been in seasons past. It's been 6 weeks since he delivered back-to-back quality starts. You have to go back to April 29 and May 4. And before this most recent outing on the West Coast, Nola did have a very strong start, and you were thinking, okay, maybe this is a building block for him and he can get on a little roll here, but he has a 5.62 ERA over his last 8 starts. He has a whip of nearly 1.5 over that span. I think it's just a lack of command. What's going on with him?
We've talked about it all year. He hasn't looked like himself, hasn't looked like the Aaron Nola we've come to expect over the years, save for maybe 3 outings, one of them 2 outings ago at home. He had unbelievable fastball command against the Yankees that day. I mean, he was dotting eyes with that thing. And also had a very good breaking ball and a difference-making changeup. He had, you know, everything that makes Aaron Nola Aaron Nola, but starting with that fast, great fastball command, getting ahead in counts. And we haven't seen that a lot this year. Just hasn't looked himself, hasn't looked terrible, didn't look good his last start, but for the most part hasn't looked terrible, but hasn't looked as good as you expect him. Something is just missing. I just think it's that great fastball command that he's had in the past. We've talked about this. He's gotten away from throwing his two-seamer as much as he had in the past and says he doesn't have as good a feel for that. In that case, he's thrown more four-seamers and, you know, made mistakes over the plate with that pitch. He's given up a bunch of two-out runs, just having trouble kind of even some two-out home runs, I believe. I think he's given up 6 or 7 two-out home runs. Just not finishing off innings like we've seen Aaron Nola in the past. And the reason I say it's alarming is, or it's becoming alarming, is because, I mean, this division is so mediocre and so up for grabs. Any team, I think, with a real hot month can really take control of this thing. And teams do have hot months. But I don't see the Phillies having a hot month without Wheeler, Nola, and Eflin really, really clicking. We've talked a lot about how Realmuto, Harper, Hoskins, McCutcheon, Segura haven't all clicked at the same time. It's the same thing in starting rotation. Those three guys need to click all at the same time. And, you know, at times they've been pretty good as a unit. And for most part, they've been pretty good as a unit. Run support's been a problem. Team has not cashed in on a lot of their games. But if we're going to see a slump or even a brief regression from Nola and Eflin, you know, where a hot spell, I think a hot month can propel you to taking control. A cold month could drop you right out of this. So that's really, to me, quite worrisome. What they're going to get out of this big three as we go forward, what we've seen recently. So, you know, like I said, Wheeler's on the mound Tuesday night. He's a good place to start a series with.
Yeah, he sure is. A 2.15 ERA Wheeler enters this game with. A lot of his numbers compare favorably to even like Roy Halladay, what he did in his Cy Young season with the Phillies. Zach Eflin's coming off one of the worst starts of his career. He gave up 4 home runs in San Francisco, and that wasn't the only loud contact. There were some crushed foul balls. There were, you know, long line drives hit by the Giants. He just didn't have it on that day. Really couldn't command his pitches. And you mentioned the 2-out home runs that Aaron Nola has allowed. Eflin that day really started with poor location on a 2-strike pitch. He was ahead 1-2 on Mike Yastrzemski, threw him a fastball that didn't really have much movement up and in, and Yastrzemski killed it for a 2-run homer that really set the tone in that game. And, you know, Nolan Eflin in 29 starts this season, the Phillies are 13-16 in those games. They have a combined 4.31 ERA compared to the league average of 4.12. So, you know, by definition to this point in the season, they've been slightly below average. And that's a problem for the Phillies because that's like really the equivalent of like Harper and Realmuto hitting .230, for example, you know, two guys who are that important. Offensively, you're talking about how all these guys haven't gotten hot at the same time. Looks like Hoskins is starting to heat up. JT Realmuto is in a good place right now. But of course, this coincides with Gene Segura missing time again on the IL. And that's just a loss the Phillies are not positioned to be able to withstand right now, given how many clutch hits he was picking up at the top of that lineup.
Yeah, he was their leading hitter. You lose your leading hitter, you're going to feel it, especially on a team that is so inconsistent offensively, a team that struggles to make contact, leaves a lot of runners, doesn't hit consistently with runners in scoring position. When you get a guy who barrels the ball up as consistently as he does in, you know, kind of the big picture, but also in the short term, he was smoking red hot. Really good month of May, came out and started the month of June with a total bang. I mean, a couple of walk-off hits. I mean, that's a serious loss. And one that can really hurt a team. They need to get this thing knocked out and get him back. This is twice he's injured his leg, lunging for, you know, running out balls. And that's a tough thing when you lose a hitter like that. So they need to get him back in the short term. You know, one of the things I'm really looking forward to seeing in this Washington series, take a guess.
Whether the net stays up behind home plate?
No.
Oh, the umpires checking pitchers?
Yeah, I want to see like Checkpoint Charlie as Zach Wheeler's walking off the mound and they stop him and they inspect his hat and his glove and his belt buckle and whatever else they. I was able to watch a little bit, you know, because the Phillies didn't play on Monday when the rule went into effect, or the enforcement of a longstanding rule went into effect. And, you know, you could actually see the pitchers were like, you know, showing their hat and they were kind of laughing about it. But it's going to happen, you know, between innings. So I'm just kind of curious to see how it all goes over. It seems like the pitchers handled it in stride on Monday night.
Well, I was going to say that I was watching the Jacob deGrom game. He started against the Braves and he was checked twice in his five innings. And after the second time, he kind of looked at the ump like, are you serious? I mean, I don't think he had the baseball with him, and then the baseball had to be thrown back to him, and then he had to show it to the umpire. So yes, it looks pretty ridiculous so far, but I'm sure in a couple months, we're all going to be used to it. Same way we got used to like mound visits being tracked on the big screen, but crazy times, man. I'm curious to see whether it really affects any Phillies pitchers drastically. Like Zach Wheeler, I mean, since the beginning of the month when the first memo was sent out, nothing's really changed with Zach Wheeler, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to dig into those spin rates and see if they're affected a little bit. I mean, I guess they have been in some spots around baseball. I am, you know, everybody's split on this thing. I am generally for this. That said, you know, I do skew old school. I mean, I've seen pitchers grab a little pine tar and little rosin, a little slide, or anything to get that little enhanced grip, and you still have to make the pitch. I mean, they've been doing that for years, but I do think with technology and modern advancements and just the way teams have really and players have really pushed the envelopes, I guess they always have, but lately, I do think some of this super sticky stuff, this spider tack, is crossing the line a little bit. They're going to, you know, pitchers are going to pay a price though, because now even something previously as innocent as maybe a little, you know, pinch of pine tar is going to be ruled illegal, and somebody's going to get nailed. Somebody will get nailed. And it's a tough job on the umpires because they're going to eject the guy and they have to make a kind of on the fly decision. But you know, some of these spin rates and velocities have really become, you know, outrageous. And if they're being fueled by this spider tack, I do think that's crossing the line. So we'll see how it happens and how it's enforced.
And yeah, well, in Garrett Cole's most recent start, I think it was against the Blue Jays, his spin rate on all of his pitches was down several hundred RPMs. And what stuck out most to me, he struck out four batters in eight innings. Garrett Cole, who, you know, was striking out like 12 batters per eight innings the last couple of years, only getting four Ks in that game. Pretty noticeable there, but really haven't seen any big drop off from the Phillies pitching staff yet. As we've talked about, Aaron Nola was struggling even before this happened. So
kind of that Cole thing is very telling. And there was, I think, a couple other pitchers. So this is a fascinating little subplot to this whole season, and a fascinating circumstance that all pitchers are going to have to deal with. It's going to affect everything, how the game is played now, how the free agent game is played in the future. You know, talked about it on the last podcast with Larry Anderson, wrote about it on Monday, and a lot of different opinions on both sides, and they all have merit. You know, some people say they're obviously doing this maybe to get more offense back. And is the offense down because pitchers are spinning it more because they're using super sticky stuff? Or is the offense down because all these teams are stressing, you know, sellout swings, which produce high strikeouts, big swings, which produce high strikeouts, uppercut swings, which produce high strikeouts. We've gotten away from, you know, moving runners, playing the old style baseball. Everything is sellout for power. And that's why the offense has struggled. I mean, Larry Anderson made a lot of good points on our podcast last week. If the pitching is dominating, it's up to, and the offense is down, it's up to the hitters to adjust, shorten your strokes, go the other way against the shift. All very, very valid opinions and insights. And he certainly has great ones. Haven't been in the game, the pro game, for 50 years. So, but long story short, I'm really curious to see these checkpoints tonight. And I'm really curious to see the first guy that gets nailed and the uproar over that. You know, is it a National League guy who just batted the inning before and had some pine tar on his hand because he batted, right? Didn't wear a batting glove. There's so many little potential situations to keep an eye on here. So, you know, it's always fascinating.
I enjoyed that podcast you did last week with Larry Anderson, and there are a couple of things I wanted to ask you about from it. First, you know, just talking about the way the teams instruct hitting these days and what kind of role that plays in offense being decreased from the game. Doesn't a certain onus also fall on the player? Because if you look at the way free agency plays out these days, the guys who hit like 270 with a 330 on base percentage and little power, they don't get paid. Whereas the guys who are hitting 230 with 30 homers, you have a better chance of getting paid now with those kinds of numbers than you did 20 years ago or 30 years ago. So if you're a player and you see that, is there even much incentive to being a slap hitter or to having a line drive approach if you see that you're not being rewarded for that the way you once were?
Well, I do think the pendulum is going to swing back. I do think the line drive hitter will once again be rewarded, because all these strikeouts, is that really sustainable? Is it much of a game if guys keep striking out and this offense keeps going down and contact rates keep going down? Isn't it kind of going to explode and cave in on itself at some point? And some team's going to realize, okay, we need to have a line drive approach to put the ball in play. Some team's going to send a kid to the minors because he's just looking to yank everything and skyrocket everything over the wall instead of gap to gap. We've already seen it in the Phillies organization. So I think once, you know, it starts with one guy, one team. And I do think at some point, you know, what's old is always new, or what's new is always old, however that saying goes. I do think at some point, you know, line drive approach, hit the ball hard, extra base hits, whether it's a home run or a double, is going to be rewarded again. It might take some time, but we're already seeing, I think we're seeing the need for change. So we'll see how that affects how guys get paid. We're going to see a lot of that in the new CBA. Guys want to get paid younger. Are they going to, you know, mess with free agency, the arbitration system, how this is all going to happen? So yeah, it's going to be a fascinating offseason in baseball with, you know, the CBA and all that. But it's a better game when there's offense and, you know, you can, if you start trying to beat the shift with a shorter stroke, I do think that's going to maybe lead to some changes in swings as well. I just don't see how all these strikeouts are sustainable for the game.
And then the other thing I wanted to ask you about from your conversation with Larry Anderson last week on this Phillies Talk podcast was his comment that the Phillies look to him like a 500 club, which I totally agree with. They are pretty much at 500, or have been for much of the season since the first week. Really haven't been able to distance themselves from that mark above or below. My question to you is, like, how do you think that sits with John Middleton? Because if you recall, at the beginning of this past offseason, there was a lot of pessimism and there was, you know, wonder, could the Phillies even finish 500 or could they end their streak of non-winning seasons? This was back when there was uncertainty whether they'd re-sign JT Realmuto or whether they'd re-sign Didi Gregorius or add to their bullpen, but they did all those things. They brought in a new president of baseball operations and the expectations changed. And now here they are with a payroll over $200 million and they're still clinging to that 500 mark. Do you think that John Middleton is looking at this and is really frustrated by it, or is kind of just accepting it because at the beginning of the offseason, you know, who knew if the Phillies were going to win this division or contend anyway?
With what I know of Middleton, I mean, he's a very, very competitive guy who wants to win. I can't imagine being a game under 500, 70 games in, sits well with him. That said, I also think he's pretty pragmatic. He probably looks and says, you know, we got over 100 games left here, so we got more than a half season left to make some type of a move here. So I can't imagine, like I said, I can't imagine he's happy with the inconsistency. I don't think any owner would, unless you were in a flat-out 100%, you know, scale down, rebuild, and they're not. There was talk early in the offseason maybe of a transition year, but that was blown up when Dombrowski came aboard and addressed the back of the rotation and brought back JT. And just the nature of bringing in Dave Dombrowski, he's a guy that he's not coming here to, you know, do a slow build. He's here to try to win something. And they have this, you know, they've had a ton of injuries. They've had bullpen issues. They've had offense issues, tons of defense issues. I mean, been terrible defensively, and they're still within shouting distance of first place. That's what makes this series going to see. That's what makes tonight's series so important. You got the Nationals right behind you. End of the week, I mean, you're four back of the Mets. You go in there, you can make this division really tight, or the Mets can really put some air between them and the second place team. That's why this week is crucial, and it's even crucial for beyond, because, you know, if you fall 6, 7, 8 back, you know, you maybe don't make that move at the trade deadline you need to make for a reliever or a back end starter. So I'm sure ownership is frustrated with where they are, and they would like to see things turned around. And by the blessings of a poor division, a mediocre division, they still have a puncher's chance and not out of it.
Right. And this week, very important. The Phillies are not going to face Max Scherzer. He's on the IL. Steven Strasburg's on the IL. Patrick Corbin pitched Sunday. So the Phillies will miss all three of them in that national series. But this weekend, they will see Jacob deGrom, who is having, you know, probably the best season ever for a pitcher, might end up having the best season ever for a pitcher. He has a 0.50 ERA. Wow. Every game he goes out there, and it's like, you know, he's at three innings with seven strikeouts and no base runners, it seems like, every time out. And it's just a matter of, like, how many hits is he going to give up? Because, you know, it's not going to be a big run total. As we sit here today, PointsBet has Jacob deGrom as the favorite to win National League MVP. He's plus 170. The only two guys within shouting distance are Fernando Tatis Jr. and Ronald Acuna Jr. And then, if you can believe it, after those three, Bryce Harper actually has the next shortest odds at plus 2,500, along with a bunch of other players like Nick Castellanos and Jesse Winker and others. But, man, Jacob deGrom, he probably would be the MVP. The only other guy I throw into that conversation pitching-wise is Kevin Gausman, who's been a godsend for the Giants, 8 wins, low 2 ERA. But deGrom's just on a totally different level.
Yeah, I love watching him pitch. He throws so hard, and it's sort of an easy 100. He's got the beautiful mechanics, and the ball comes in on that downward angle, that downward plane. And he commands down and away with everything so well. He's a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, if you're talking about MVP, I mean, it's like he transcends Cy Young, right? If you're talking about MVP, what are the Mets if they take him away, you know? Where are the Mets if he's not there? And that's a really good way to maybe gauge, is he the MVP? And I have to say right now, what he's doing and what he means to that team. I know he only pitches every fifth day, but I do think there is a ripple effect throughout the whole team, because he gives you so much confidence on that one day, but you can build off it other days. Obviously you're not going to have big losing streaks with him. I think he's a fascinating case, and we might see a guy rack up the Cy Young and the MVP in one season. We've seen it before. We might see it again.
Yeah. You know, when you ask that question, where would the Mets be without him? It's not just a matter of looking at what their record is in his games, because like you said, when you know you have Jacob deGrom and then you have a rash of injuries like the Mets had in April and May, it gives you confidence that you can withstand it because you have a horse like that. It kind of similar in some ways to what the Phillies feel with Zach Wheeler. Like when they're on a skid and they have Zach Wheeler going the next night or the next series, they feel extremely confident about it because of, similar to DeGrom, that easy velocity. You know, Wheeler's not on DeGrom's level, but both of them, the way they're able to command their fastballs low in the zone and have it be 99 on like the outside corner, it's just untouchable.
Yeah, you're right. And then when they need to, if they need to go up in the zone to get a strikeout, they can do that, get ground balls. Zach Wheeler, he's a lot like DeGrom in that. He's a lot of fun to watch because when he's on with his command, he's like, you know, he's like a surgeon, the way he can carve you up. And he's done a lot of that this season. I would anticipate him being the Phillies' lone all-star. We're getting closer to that. I think it would be nice to get him some rest. But I also think he deserves to get an inning in Denver.
You don't think Gene Segura might be able to sneak his way in there, all-star game?
You know, he might. Yeah, I certainly not trying to, I guess, being on the IL, I don't know. But certainly with the bat, he's, you know, gosh, if he was qualified, he'd be like the league's third leading hitter. So I do think he would have a shot as well. Those would be two pretty good candidates, yes.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
And it would got to be pretty disappointing for the Phillies that Bryce Harper probably isn't going to make it. It would be two full seasons now that he's been a Philly that he would not have made the All-Star team if he doesn't make it.
Very disappointing. he had a good first year here. He really came back with that second half, really. I mean, I think if he had maybe a postseason All-Star team that year, he would have been on it. But, yeah, he wasn't on the midseason All-Star team, the one that, you know, we all recognize. This is year three, and year three hasn't gone well. He's had these nagging injuries that really make you think, where are things headed? Because he's in his 10th or 11th year in the majors now, 10th year, I guess. And though he's only 28, there's mileage on that odometer, and you wonder what it's going to look like in 3 years and 5 years, because he's got 10 years left. He's had shoulders, had back. The back is concerned. He's missed some games with that. So all these little nagging injuries, and you know, at that age and with his importance and the length on his contract, it's all a bit worrisome, and it's held him back this year from having the season that they would have hoped so far. But there is a half season left, so maybe he can go off on a tear. They certainly need him to go off on a tear. When you have that pedigree, that track record, and you have that paycheck and that reputation, and you've put a lot of it on yourself, you want to be that guy. You want to be one of the game's biggest stars. You want to go to Cooperstown. You want to win World Series. At some point, you need to carry a team for a good stretch of time. I'm not saying every night, but when you look at a six-week period, you say, wow, he's really done some damage here. He's really carried this team. He's vaulted them into first place. They need that type of performance from Bryce Harper. They really do. And we all know he wants it. You just wonder what's holding him back. Is his back a little more serious than we're hearing? I just don't know, but he's much like Nola in that nothing has really looked like it's clicked 100% this year.
And Harper looks like recently he's adjusted his playing style. I'm wondering if it's because of the injuries. You recall his first year here, played great defense. He graded out very well defensively. And I remember I kept like tweeting out and including the stat in game stories about how many balls that he had dove or slid to catch in that first season. And then that slipped last year as he was dealing with the back injury. His defense was not the same. And here recently, he hasn't been running out balls. There was a play in San Francisco where he hit a sharp line drive to shortstop that one hopped Brandon Crawford for a double play. And Harper wasn't even halfway down the line to first base when he peeled off. Then later in that game, he hit a ball hard off the wall in left field. And he stopped for about a second and a half to admire it. It wasn't a long, a long display by any means, but he was thrown out second trying to get a double on that play. And if he hustles all the way from the get-go, he's probably safe. And you just wonder, like Harper, a guy who prides himself on playing so hard and running so hard and always hustling, is he kind of picking his spots so as to not aggravate any of these injuries?
That's a great question. And I've noticed it too. He's not running the bases like, you know, his hair was on fire as he did his first year here. You wonder if it's because, is he down because he's not producing, or is he protecting his back? You know, I don't know, but I do think an explanation, you know, would be, I think, important there to you know, connect with the fans, you know, what's going on. Certainly, you know, that question will be asked.
All right. Well, Phillies Nationals on tap here. Big week for the Phils. They have four with the Mets this weekend. There's a doubleheader Friday. And after Thursday's off day, the Phillies have no more off days between then and the All-Star break, which is July 12th. It's 18 games and 17 days for the Phils after Thursday. So big NL East week on tap. And, you know, they can kind of change things in the division if they just have one good week of baseball. The question is, can they do it? He's Jim Salisbury. I'm Corey Seidman. Thanks for listening to the Phillies Talk Podcast.